Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Twenty-third of Heshar, Yom Sabrah, in the year of enlightenment, 976, 916 AM. Despair is a plague without virion or bacterium. Its vectors innumerable, its onset acute and chronic. Endemic to all, deadly in some. There is no greater threat to life than despair, for though in and of itself it cannot kill, it carries with it a dramatic increase in risk for death of all kinds. A weakening of the immune system, to be sure, but in despair we also find demons of drink, gluttony and starvation, of sex without joy and sleep without rest. In despair, we find neglect, a most insidious symptom. Ophelia is refusing treatment. Her reasons are many, but I fear there is one above all. Despair. She has never been a happy woman. Even in moments of joy, she has found difficulty in maintaining hope, which is, of course, the only inoculant to despair. She insists her decision is based upon calculated risk. Surgery carries dangers. Even the most well-intentioned and highly skilled surgeons can make mistakes. And surgery in winter, when resources are scarce, would not be wise. Her symptoms could also be explained by a great many things. But in the end, I suspect she suffers from one of despair's greatest comorbidities. Fear. In despair there is dread. A dread of what is to come, but also a dread of things once loved. The fear that joy may never come again. That even our greatest pleasures may fail before the might of sorrow. Despair is a plague without virion or bacterium. And yet it spreads. I am its victim. I fear for my friend. In vain desperation, I pray. Yes, pray to the Nagifim, that their cruelty may be withheld, or perhaps redirected to a more deserving body. I would take it from her. Gods, I would take it from her. I must not be cowed by despair. Must not allow my resolve to be broken. If I were not an educated man, I may comfort myself in the unknown. She may be fine. It could be nothing. But I know better. In lieu of hope, I shall seek peace. The peace of acceptance. And the joys offered by those we love. And the catharsis of finality. For it is in extremis that the depth of love and the treasures of time, both past and never to be, can be felt at their deepest and most profound. and I shall spend my time with her. Every moment that can be spared. I only hope that fate allows. For today, the first snows fall. And winter, after all, is plague season. Twenty-fifth of a shot, now Yom Lasik. In the Year of Enlightenment, 976, 10:23 p.m. Ophelia is away with her consort to the trading outpost in the east to acquire goods and sundry that will not be available when the ice storms come. And in her absence, I have found solace in spirits. And in spirits, I am reminded of my hatred for spirits. The spectral kind, not the drinking kind. Same word, really. Old alchemy. Spirit once referred to the essence of something and distillation of material. And a specter, I suppose, is meant to be the distillation of the self. As though by some eldritch works one might leave an impression of themselves upon the world. We are physical beings, crude matter, strung together by sunlight and struggle. The soul is a delusion, and its imprint is equally delusional. Yes, I have decided, in advance of the coming nightmare, in advance of the surge of cases, I give to you a lecture on the nature of, perhaps, supernature. A lecture on the chicanery and humbug of wraiths, spectres, shades, and ghosts. I have struck the library like a storm, and I have in my possession several volumes on the subject. Bear with me as I chew through dry parchment and drier prose, that I might sup on the tender meats of truth. That's good. That's good. I should write that down. So the 6th of Hishon, Yom Shavaz, in the Year of Enlightenment, 976. 9:43 a.m. It is Shavaz, the day of reflection, but I would rather not see mine. The city is dormant on this day of rest, and as such I am unable to soothe my miseries with eggs. I could likely conjure myself a fry-up, but there are few pleasures to be found in the city, quite like food prepared by somebody else. It is my fault for drinking so prodigiously the day before Shavaz. Nothing is open. I take comfort knowing that tomorrow, being Yom Shetef, I may be able to squeeze my way into someone else's feast at the price of peeled potatoes and medical anecdotes. Avoiding, of course, the more unappetizing afflictions. But enough about food and alcohol. Certainly enough alcohol. It appears in my cups I have purchased the world's knowledge on ghosts and phantasms. I seem to recall a promise twice made of a lecture on spirits, and now I have the time to make good. And so I shall savor a repast of knowledge rather than eggs. I wish I could say it would be as nourishing, but alas, I find the subject matter insubstantial. Twenty-sixth of Hishon continues. Yadom, Tamilen, whoever is listening, I imagine I will have many errant thoughts. I wish to record them. Is there some way to cut the wire and re-weld it without leading silence and the sounds of machinery? Also, is there some possibility that the new prototype will be ready by winter's end? I imagine there may be a better, cheaper medium than steel, and any reduction in size and weight would be tremendous help. And besides all that, the etchings on the device itself are unsettling. 26th continues. I have here a local news report. 13th of Elam. Detailing a scandal involving a renowned parapsychologist and purported spiritual medium. The charlatan claimed to have developed powerful psychic abilities as the result of a Shiga infection. He was publicly humiliated when his smoke and mirrors show was sabotaged by a disgruntled widow. Apparently, this mountebank convinced the grieving man to exhume his wife that he might conjure her essence through the salts of her flesh. It would seem the scoundrel paid a woman to dress as the specter that he may extract wealth from the bereaved. Fortunately, the would-be rube saw through him, which earned a sound pummeling, followed by his on-stage shaming. I would not dream of using this one example as a basis to disprove all claims of the phantasmal. However, with so many such incidences and indecencies, you can imagine why it is difficult to lend credence to even the most supported claims. 26th continues. Three more, of course. Man pays boy to act as deceased child to coax company secrets from bereaved mother and CEO of Valduk Textiles. Woman bilks dozens out of inheritances, acting as spiritual conduit. Dozens of reports of specters in abandoned site of multiple murder reveals a family of drifters sheltering from the winter. It goes on. I fear the library may have been a poor choice. Perhaps the brothers of the local monastery will be forthcoming. It is a holy day, after all. 26th continues. Perhaps 27th. With portraiture being the height of artistic expression in Jostock, it is no wonder that the talent, without patronage, might turn to the local control for work sketching criminals. In my case, heretics. How was I to know that Krasnia Street Chapel would have my face posted above their reception desk? A near miss. These Orthodox churches are decidedly more bilious in matters of heresy than the Zverin. No matter. Their security was weak, and my will was strong. I have procured a baker's dozen fresh cases, and three not so fresh. I know what you're thinking. Randolph, you can't steal from the clergy. It's wrong. I will tell you that what is wrong is hiding knowledge away to rot in the stacks. Knowledge is power, and power belongs in the hands of the people. And other such justifications. I shall return the documents at my nearest convenience. It is not as though these brothers are pacing their rectories, wringing their hands over the fate of child dreams of grandfather, and if not the butcher, then whom, which, despite being an official church document, was written in the style of some yellowing penny dreadful. Every writer thinks himself a writer. Anyway, I have much reading to do, and tomorrow to do it. Shh. Who am I shushing? Come back to bed, Ian. I can hear you breathing through my doorframe. 27th of Vishon, Yosetef, 976, 3:26 a.m. I could not sleep. The room was rich with the stench of dust and leather. I am only a man, after all, and a man has needs. Paper needs. Book needs. I have slaked my dry lusts between the ink-stained sheets of two of the aforementioned novellas, both of which could have been a single page. I am finally feverish with exhaustion and sufficiently bored to tears that sleep may finally take me. But first, a summary. The grandfather, whom the mother insisted was dead, had in fact disappeared after robbing his daughter. But he missed his grandson and would play games with him in the night, insisting that these endeavours were dreams. Case solved. After the death of the neighbourhood butcher, a local woman who had been sleeping with the man began finding meats she did not purchase, strategically stored throughout the home. It turns out her husband had begun sleeping with another butcher across town, and was thanked for his sausage with sausage. It seems neither could resist their carnal delights. As to what compelled these people to consult the church is beyond me. The uninformed, it seems, look to the spiritual in all things, even the mundane. Fortunately, the rest appear to be actual case studies of negific infections. And while I am very eager to indulge my curiosities, for now, I must sleep. 27th of Ishan, Yom Shetef, 976, 11:14 a.m. I am late in waking. The selection at the bakery was paltry, and my eyes ache from the strain of night reading. But Gudrun's mushroom tea is working wonders for my mood. As I peruse the labors of the church, I realize how truly pleased I am to be freed from the overwhelming mediocrity of ecclesiastic publication, and how important my work truly is. The depth of indoctrination for young clerics entering the church borders on the unethical. Every letter drips with monastic obsession for the Netanim. The evolution of humanity is a miracle, but not one attributable to the gods. We are the byproduct of the natural philosophies that govern the real, and the gods are parasites onto this reality. We suffer for their amusement. To cloud one's mind with delusions of a benevolent offshoot from the Nagafim is madness of the highest order. And that such a deity would be dedicated solely to our creation and our well-being, it is the height of conceit. Perhaps this mood is more weight than a single cup of tea can bear. I shall continue in my studies. One of my late-night procurements bears the warning, Ayum Machshava, a thought hazard, no less. Knowledge of these contents is considered to be a Class 4 threat. Mimetic risk, minimal. Ugh. The church hands out these thought hazard stamps like candy. Most of my published works are considered Class 1, but the only harm likely to be suffered as a consequence of my work is that dispensed by Netonic zealots. I should clarify for you, dear stranger. More than likely you are a member of the Institute, and we do not use such ridiculous warnings except in cases of sugar-induced madness and the resultant mimetic threats. Yum, meaning menacing, threatening, or dreadful. Machshav, meaning thought or cognition. Yom Makshava is a thought or piece of information or an idea that once introduced into the mind of a thinking creature risks distress, injury, or death. The classifications are thus. 4. Briut, meaning wellness. Class 4 hazards would endanger your immediate emotional health and may cause lingering distress. By the church's standards, finding out your mother has been shtupping the local deacon would be a Class 4 hazard. Class 3, basar, meaning flesh. Class 3 hazards may cause literal physical harm, such as lesions, rash, stigmata, or mutation. An idea would need to be so distressing that its emotional impact might manifest in psychosomatic injuries. Or in some cases, knowing something may incur hostility from others. This is where my works should lie, as devotees do not take kindly to the questioning of their faith. 2. Chaim, meaning life. This one should be obvious. This classification suggests a thought whose realization might lead a person to end their own life to escape it. Though the conceit is that the idea itself might kill you, which is absurd. And finally, 1. Nishama, the soul. An idea so abhorrent and vile that its acceptance may endanger your immortal soul, which of course does not exist. Or that it may in some way transform you into some manner of Shad, or demon, which also do not exist. But this document, with its Briot rating, is likely to contain graphic descriptions or flagrant violation of a fundamental tenet of Netanism. Well, I have work to do. I shall desist with the short updates and instead reserve my thoughts until I have formulated a proper report. Let us hope that at least one of these contains something of interest.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Sixth of Kislev, Yom Shetev, 976. 2:04 p.m. Case 004. The Spectral Delusion. Introduction. There are throughout Alam tales of the girl in white, a symbol of virginal purity, turned vengeful spirit. Here in Jostock, the heart of Kemavek society, she is known as the Devochka Vibyolom. After reading an etonic case file of the same name, I was compelled to investigate a reported sighting. This case details the course of my own infection, the visions I have seen, and what I believe to be undeniable proof regarding the nature of spirits. Abstract. I, Radolf Bertwein, was unwittingly exposed to an unfamiliar Shiga virus. The resulting infection brought about hallucinations, delusions, and a major psychotic break. Some recordings of my ramblings can be found in Addendum A. Case History. Having assembled and consumed a series of cases on the subject of ghosts and specters, I cracked open Devochka Vibyolom. Saving the best for last, I suppose. However, after only a few pages, I was interrupted by my apprentice, Ian Markovat. I tasked him with finding errors in some of my older case files, a marvelous practice for dissolving hero worship and showcasing common early errors. After that, I did my rounds for the workers here at the Red Sheet. One of the conditions for my free room, board, and services is providing care to staff and clientele. A small price to pay, but a considerable cost cut for Madame Ophelia's monthly expenses. By the time I had finished, it was late in the evening. A seasonal flu had been working its way through the staff, and all were convinced that it was the roseate swell, a rare and highly mutational infection of the genitals, mouth, and throat. Believing my exhaustion to be the combination of the work and my advanced age, I turned in early, unable to master the previous enthusiasm for my treatise on spirits. And in the morning, I attributed my fever to the same flu that I had spent the previous day standing vigil against. Life is a balancing act. One may be inclined to obsess over health, transforming common maladies into the next great plague. But it is also easy for one to ignore serious symptoms with a wave of the hand. Oh, I'm just tired. I haven't been eating well. Everyone has this pain. It is up to each of us to determine what is a reasonable amount of caution. But it is vital that we all have a support network and that we trust those around us with our internal experiences and seriously consider their advice. I had every reason to believe that my fatigue, confusion, and fever were the result of age, overwork, and an incoming flu. I had no reason to disregard Ian when he told me I was acting strangely. By his retelling, I spent the day in isolation, reading the Devishka over and over and over again, taking meticulous notes, which I now see to be nonsense. The Devishka begins, as many Natonic cases do, with relevant scripture, followed by a breakdown. In my first foray, I had only read far enough to get the gist of the case. A young man by the name of Matthias Brigus spurned his lover, Birandi Bondova, who then took her own life in grief. In the days to come, he began to see visions of a young woman in white. That is where I stopped that first day. If I had continued, I would have seen that the case begins a perverse metamorphosis about the quartermark. It starts with run-on sentences, tangential thoughts, disconnected from the main body of the case, footnotes, and bizarre marginalia. It then takes on a sinister tone. The author, one brother Jonathan Summer, intimates that in the darkness of night, he has caught in his periphery a flash of white. His obsession escalates. He journeys into the night to find the home where the young woman found her end. The poor girl's parents, being kind and faithful people, were all too willing to allow the cleric into their home. He remained in their company for a time, taking their hands in prayer under the auspices of tending to his flock. That is, until he asked to see Birandi's room, where she was discovered. There, alone in the dark, at the scene of her suicide, he describes an overwhelming dysphoria. As he turns to flee, a woman in white bars his path. She descends upon him, whispering phantasmal gibberish as he cowers in the corner. When he musters the strength to peer between his fingers, she has gone. He runs screaming from the Bondova household. The following day, he takes a carriage to the home of young Matthias, only to discover the corpse of the boy and his mistress having suffocated by unknown means. His notes descend into madness. As night falls, the girl can be seen in every shadow. Sleep is shattered by visions of her, and his own guilt and shame for deeds long past roils in his heart. The case is concluded by Brother Jakob Schmidt, who found Brother Jonathan suffocated in his dorm with ligature marks on his neck. By the time I read these words, my mind had already begun its descent. Presentation. As noted above, my symptoms began with fatigue, fever, and mild delirium. The incubation period is unclear as the time of exposure has not been established, but I refuse to believe in the threat of mimetic virions. Ideas alone cannot carry illness. Regardless, after the initial symptoms, I awoke with a considerable headache, as well as chills and a delirium that had worsened. According to my apprentice, I could not speak more than two sentences before rambling about a tangentially related subject. He also informed me that I was suffering from a heightened pattern recognition, resulting in feelings of intense and dreadful significance over unrelated matters. I also experienced a profound nostalgic response, as though believing things had happened before that clearly had not. Over the course of the next 24 hours, these responses became exaggerated, and coupled with an overwhelming sense of urgency. It should be noted, dear stranger, that the subject of my obsession and delusion was the finding of evidence against the reality that I was perceiving. I sought with fervor to disprove my madness, to make sane what was insane. And I did so by following in the footsteps of my predecessor while attempting to document my experiences. The Brandorva family had long since died. The father, a suicide. The mother, heart disease. The home had been abandoned. And as I have no compunction about breaking into a church, a disused home poses little obstacle. I suspect that in my long transit across town, my symptoms had already progressed to full hallucination. However, with the volume of stimulus in the busy streets of Zhostov, it was difficult to tell whether the white figure in the corner of my eye was the very specter that took the lives in the story of the Devushka, or simply a trick of the light. But when I walked into that cold and desolate place, I felt a dread beyond measure. A certainty that death had come, and there could be no escape. I stalked the halls of the Bondova family, their futures and memories in shards and tatters upon the rotting floorboards. I ascended the stair, the groans and sighs of the drafty home, a funereal chorus. When I finally entered the room of the Devushka, I felt my throat begin to close. White linen kissed the dust of years as the phantasm drifted towards me. Pale arms outstretched, lank black hair obscuring the horrors of the face beneath. When I felt her icy hands upon my throat, I did not rage against the coming end. I knew this was the fate I deserved. The sharp sting of steel bit into my throat, and I pulled breath for the first time in what felt like hours. Young Ian had followed me with a vial of steroids. It seems he had cracked the case with the help of my margin notes. With proper care, I was able to make a swift recovery. The virus, whatever it may be, clearly has a short run. And now that my mind has mostly cleared, I can finally do my job and close the book on the Devushka Vibilum. Symptoms begin as any other common infection. However, the virus also triggers a hallucinatory response, not unlike that of certain mushrooms. This slow-burn psychedelic high is guided by the themes and experiences of the victim around the time of infection. The exact mechanism by which the virus affects the endocrine system is unclear, but in late stages, a massive influx of cortisol and histamines cause extreme dysphoria and anaphylaxis, the closure of the throat. As for the imagery, I suspect that the image of a white figure in dark spaces is a common fear to the human mind, a byproduct of our evolutionary need to recognize potentially harmful patterns. And with pattern recognition amplified, one might see tigers where there are only cats. This, coupled with the considerable influx of shame and dread brought on by the change in chemistry, and you have a recipe for a mind creating visual explanations for internal sensations. A recipe for ghosts. Treatment. The symptoms in question are quite treatable. Steroids, being anti-inflammatory, will treat the headache, fever, and prevent throat closure. Restraint is advised to treat the delirium. I also personally recommend Rashad's Bloom, as it has been shown to prematurely end hallucinatory effects of certain mushrooms, and may soothe the worst of the madness in this case. Conclusion. Unfortunately, there is little more to be found here. Yet again, we have seen that ghost stories are exactly that. Stories we tell ourselves for comfort in the darkness of the unknown. More than likely, this, like all reports of spirits, was brought on by a Shigavirus. I only wish to find out how I became infected. No matter. Not all mysteries need to be solved. Ian, you have been trying to separate those pages for the last 3 minutes. Just lick your thumb, man. Just lick your thumb. Oh, dear. For variant sample of this unknown virus, see the pages of the included copy of Gevishka Vibhyalam. And do not lick your thumb.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Heresies of Red Ulf Burnt Wine. I also wanted to thank you for your patience in waiting for its release. I decided to give myself a break from addendums in the month of March to recharge. I can't always promise bonus episodes, but I'll always do my best. I have an addendum ready for case 003, The Madam of Many Faces, but I'm waiting on my voice actor to finish the reading. Fair warning, it's a little steamy and thematically very different from the normal vibe of the show. If you find yourself itching for more information about the world of Thorb, you can find 2 lore-packed lectures read by Red Ulf on the Patreon, which can be found at thorb.info. If there are subjects you want to hear more about, please let me know on the Patreon. You can also reach out to me at admin@slapdashstudios.com. This project is very dear to me, and it means the world to have your listenership and support. At the moment, I am unemployed and attempting to turn this work into my full-time job. If you'd like to see more episodes and new podcasts from me, please consider donating to the Patreon. I'm sure there's a lot of other things I wanted to tell you that I've forgotten. I can be as absent-minded as Red Ulf at times. But for now, just know that I appreciate you listening, and hope to see you again, dear stranger.